They're part of nature's beauty, she told him, a small line appearing in her smooth brow. That makes them good for something. He laughed this time. He couldn't help it. True enough, he glanced around for signs of the girl's parents. You aren't here alone. Mum is in the woods. I hid behind that oak so I could see you ride past. It was very funny when you fell off. Bearden looked over at Spit, who artfully swung his head in the other direction. My horse thought so, too. What's his name? Spit. That's ugly. So is he, but I have a dog that's uglier. I've heard about your dog. It's as big as a horse, and you tamed it after fighting it for a day and a night during the test of the wild. I've heard other stories, too. I write them down, but I have to hide the book from Mama and Dada. I heard you defeated 10 men on your own, and have already been chosen as the next aspect of the Sixth Order. 10 men, he wondered. Last I heard it was 7. By my 30th year it'll be 100. It was 4, he told her, and I wasn't on my own. And the next aspect cannot be chosen until the death or resignation of the current aspect. And my dog isn't as big as a horse, nor did I fight him for a day and a night. If I fought him for 5 minutes, I'd lose. Oh. She seemed a little crestfallen. I'll have to change my book. Sorry. She gave a small shrug. When I was little, Mama said you were going to come live with us, and be my brother, but you never did. Dada was very sad. The wave of confusion that swept through him was sickening. For a moment, the world seemed to move around him, the ground swaying, threatening to tip him over. What? Alanis! A woman was hurrying towards them from the woods, a handsome woman with curly black hair and a plain woolen cloak. Alanis, come here! The girl gave a small pout of annoyance. She'll take me away now. I'm sorry, brother, the woman said breathlessly as she approached, catching hold of the girl's hand and pulling her close. Despite the woman's evident agitation, Velen noted her gentleness with the girl, both arms closing over her protectively. My daughter's ever curious. I hope she didn't bother you overly. Her name is Alanis? Velen asked her, his confusion giving way to an icy numbness. The woman's arms tightened around the girl. Yes. And your name, lady? Hilla. She forced a smile. Hilla Justil. It meant nothing to him. I do not know this woman. He saw something in her expression, something besides the concern for her daughter. Recognition. She knows my face. He switched his gaze to the little girl, searching her face carefully. Pretty like her mother, same jaw, same nose. Different eyes. Dark eyes. Realization dawned with the force of an icy gale, dispelling the numbness, replacing it with something cold and hard. How many years do you have, Alanis? 10 and 8 months, she replied promptly. Nearly 11, then. I was 11 when my father brought me here. He noticed her hands were empty, and saw she had dropped her flowers. I always wondered why he did that. He reached down to gather the winter blooms, being careful not to break the stems, and went over to crouch in front of Alanis. Don't forget these. He smiled at her, and she smiled back. He tried to fix the image of her face in his head. Brother, Hilla began. You shouldn't linger here. He straightened and went over to Spit, grasping his reins tight. The horse plainly read his mood, because he allowed himself to be mounted without demur. These woods can be treacherous in winter. You should seek flowers elsewhere in future. He watched Hilla clutching her daughter and fighting to master her fear. Finally she said, Thank you, brother. We shall. He allowed himself a final glance at Alanis before spurring Spit into a gallop. This time he vaulted the log without the slightest hesitation, and they thundered into the woods, leaving the girl and her mother behind. I always wondered why he did that. Now I know. The months passed. Winter's frost became spring's thaw, and Velen spoke no more than he had to. He practiced. He watched the birth of Scratch's pups. He listened to Frentice's joyous tales of life in the Order. He rode his bad-tempered horse, and he said almost nothing. Always it was there, the coldness, the numb emptiness left by his meeting with Alornis. Her face lingered in his mind, the shape of it, the darkness of her eyes. 10 and 8 months. His mother had died a little under 5 years ago. 10 and 8 months. Canis tried to talk to him, seeking to draw him out with one of his stories, the tale of the Battle of the Earlish Forest, where the armies of Renfrail and Azrael met in bloody conflict for a day and a night. It was before the realm was made, when Janus was a lord and not a king, when the four fiefs of the realm were split and fought each other like cats in a sack. But Janus united them, with the wisdom of his word and the keenness of his blade, and the power of his faith. It was this that brought the Sixth Order into the battle, the vision of a realm ruled by a king that put the faith before all things. It was the charge of the Sixth Order that broke the Renfrailian line and won the day. Velen listened to it all without comment. He had heard it before. And when they brought the Renfrailian Lord Theros before the king, wounded and chained, he spat defiance and demanded death rather than kneel before an upstart whelp. King Janus surprised all by laughing. "I do not require you to kneel, brother," he said, "nor do I require you to die. Scant use you would be to this realm dead." At this, Lord Theros replied, "Your realm is a madman's dream," Velen cut in. And the king laughed again, and they spent a day and a night arguing until argument became discussion, and finally Lord Theros saw the wisdom of the king's course. Ever since, he has been the king's most loyal vassal. Canis's face fell. "I've told you this before."
"Once or twice."
They were near the river, watching Frentis and his group of youngsters play with Scratch's puppies. The hound bitch had produced 6 in all, 4 males and 2 females, seemingly harmless bundles of wet fur when she had licked at them on the kennel floor. They had grown quickly, and were already half the size of a normal dog, though they gambolled around and tripped over their own paws like all pups. Frentis had been allowed to name them all, but his choices proved somewhat unimaginative.
"Slasher!"
he called to his favorite pup, the largest of the lot, waving a stick.
"Here, boy!"
"What is it, brother?" Canis asked him. "Where does this silence come from?" Velen watched Frentis being bowled over by Slasher, giggling as the pup slobbered over his face. "He loves it here," he observed. "The Order has certainly been good for him," Canis agreed. "Seems he's grown a foot or more since he came here. And he learns quickly. The masters think well of him since he never needs to be told anything twice. I don't think he's even had a caning yet. What was his life like, I wonder, that this place is somewhere he could love?" He turned back to Canis. "He chose to be here, unlike the rest of us. He chose this. He wasn't forced through the gate by an unloving parent." Canis moved closer and lowered his voice. "Your father wanted you back, Velen. You should always remember that. Like Frentis, you chose to be here."
10 years, 8 months. Mama said you were going to come live with us and be my brother. But you never did.
Why? Why did he want me back?
Regret? Guilt? Why does a man do anything?
The Aspect told me once that my presence here was a symbol of my father's devotion to the faith and the realm. If he had come into conflict with the king, perhaps withdrawing me would symbolize the opposite. Canis's expression grew somber. "You think so little of him, brother. Although we are taught to leave our families behind, it bodes ill for a son to hate his father."
10 years, 8 months.
You have to know a man to hate him. Chapter 4. The coming of summer brought the traditional week-long exchange with brothers and sisters from different orders. They were allowed to choose the order in which they would be placed. It was usual for the boys of the Sixth Order to trade places with brothers from the Fourth, the order with which they would work most closely following confirmation. Instead, Velen opted for the Fifth.
"The Fifth?" Master Solis frowned at him. "The Order of the Body? The Order of Healing? You want to go there?"
"Yes, Master."
"What on earth do you think you can learn there? More importantly, what do you think you can offer?"
His cane tapped the back of Valen's hand. marked with the scars of practice and the splash of molten metal from Master Jestin's forge. These aren't made for healing. My reasons are my own, Master. He knew he was risking the cane, but it had lost its sting long ago. Master Solis grunted and moved down the line.
What about you, Nissa?
Want to join your brother in mopping the brow of the sick and feeble?
I would prefer the Third Order, Master.
Solis gave him a long look. Scribblers and book hoarders. He shook his head sadly. Barkas and Entos chose the safe option of the Fourth Order, whilst Norta took evident delight in electing for the Second.
The Order of Contemplation and Enlightenment,
Solis said tonelessly.
You want to spend a week in the Order of Contemplation and Enlightenment?
I feel my soul would benefit from a period of meditation on the great mysteries, Master, Norta replied, showing his perfect teeth in an earnest smile. For the first time in months, Valen felt like laughing.
You mean you want a week of sitting on your arse? Solis said.
Meditation is normally conducted in a sitting position, Master. Valen laughed. He couldn't help it. 3 hours later, as he completed his 40th lap of the practice ground, he was still chuckling.
Brother Valen.
The grey-cloaked man at the gate was old, thin and bald. But Valen found himself disconcerted by the man's teeth, pearly white and perfect. Like Norta's, only the smile was genuine. The old brother was alone, wiping a mop across a dark brown stain on the cobbled courtyard.
I am to report to the Aspect, Valen replied.
Yes, we were told you are coming.
The old brother lifted the catch on the gate and pulled it open.
Rare for a brother from the Sixth to come to learn from us.
Are you alone, brother?
Valen said, stepping through the gate.
I assume in a place such as this, there is sore need for a guard.
Unlike the Sixth, the house of the Fifth Order was situated within the walls of the capital, a large cruciform building rising from the slums of the southern quarter, its whitewashed walls a bright beacon amidst the drab mass of closely packed, poorly built houses hugging the fringes of the docks. Valen had never been to the southern quarter before, but quickly came to understand why it was rarely frequented by people with something worth stealing. The intricate network of shadowed alleyways and refuse-clogged streets provided ample opportunities for ambush. He had picked his way through the mess, not wishing to report to the Fifth Order with dirty boots, stepping over huddled forms, sleeping off the previous night's grog, and ignoring the unintelligible calls of those who had either had too much or not enough. Here and there a few listless whores gave him a disinterested glance, but made no effort to entice his custom. Order boys had no money, after all.
Oh, we never get bothered, the old man told him.
As he closed the gate, Valen noted there was no lock.
Been guarding this house for 10 years or more. Never a problem here.
Then why do you have to guard the gate? The old brother gave him a puzzled look.
This is the Order of Healing, brother. People come here for help. Someone has to meet them.
Oh, Valen said. Of course.
Still, I do have my old Bess.
The old brother went into the small brick building that served as a guardhouse and returned with a large oak wood club.
Just in case.
He handed it to Valen, seemingly expecting an expert opinion.
It's...
Valen hefted the club, swinging it briefly before handing it back.
A fine weapon, brother.
The old man seemed delighted.
Made it myself, when the Aspect gave me the gate to guard. My hands has gotten too stiff to mend bones or sew cuts, you see.
He turned and walked quickly towards the house.
Come, come, I'll take you to the Aspect.
You've been here a long time, Valen asked, following.
Only 5 years or so.
Apart from training, of course.
Spent most of my brotherhood in the southern ports.
I tell you, there's no pox or disease on this earth that a sailor can't catch. Instead of leading him to the large door at the front of the house, the old brother took him around the building and into a side entrance. Inside was a long corridor, bare of decoration and possessing a strong redolence of something both acidic and sweet.
Vinegar and lavender, the old man said, seeing him wrinkle his nose. Keeps the place free of foul humours.
He took Valen past numerous rooms, where it seemed there was little but empty beds, and into a circular chamber tiled from floor to ceiling with white porcelain tiles. In the centre of the chamber, a young man lay atop a table, naked and writhing. Two burly grey-cloaked brothers held him down, whilst Aspect Alera Almendar examined the crudely bandaged wound in his stomach. The man's screams were stopped by the strap of leather clamped into his mouth. The circumference of the chamber was lined with ascending rows of benches, where an audience of grey-robed brothers and sisters of varying ages looked down on the spectacle. There was a rustle of movement as they turned their gaze on Valen. "Aspect?" the old man said, raising his voice, the echo of it incredibly loud in the chamber. "Brother Valen Alsorna, of the Sixth Order." Aspect Alera looked up from the young man's wound, her smiling face adorned with a line of fresh blood spatter across her forehead. "Valen, how tall you've grown." "Aspect," Valen replied with a formal nod, "I submit myself to your service." On the table the young man arched his back, a plaintive whimper escaping the gag. "You find me engaged in a most pressing case," Aspect Alera said, taking a pair of scissors from a nearby table to cut away the dirty bandage covering the young man's wound. "This man took a knife in the gut in the early hours of the morning. An argument over the favours of a young lady, apparently. Given the amount of ale and red flour already in his blood, we cannot give him any more for fear of killing him, so we must work while he suffers." She put the scissors aside and held out her hand. A young, grey-robed sister placed a long-bladed instrument in her palm. "Adding to his woes," Aspect Alera went on, "is the fact that the tip of the blade broke off inside his stomach and must be removed." She raised her gaze to the audience on the benches. "Can anyone tell me why?" Most of the audience raised a hand, but the Aspect nodded at a grey-haired man in the front row. "Brother Innes."
"Infection, Aspect," the man said. "The broken blade may poison the wound and cause it to fester. It may also be lodged close to a blood vessel or organ."
"Very good, brother. And so we must probe the wound." She bent over the young man and spread the lips of the cut with her left hand, applying the probe with the right. The young man's scream spat the gag from his mouth and filled the chamber. Aspect Alera drew back a little, glancing at the two burly brothers holding the young man to the table. "He must be securely held, brothers." The young man began to thrash wildly, succeeding in wrestling one of his arms free, his head banging on the table, madly kicking legs narrowly missing the Aspect, who was forced to retreat a few steps. Valen moved to the table and placed his hand over the young man's mouth, forcing his head back onto the table, leaning close, meeting his eyes. "Pain," he said, fixing the man's gaze. "It's a flame." The young man's eyes filled with fear as Valen bore down on him. "Focus. The pain is a flame inside your mind. See it. See it." The man's breath was hot on Valen's palm, but his thrashing had subsided. "The flame grows smaller. It shrinks. It burns bright, but it's small. You see it?" Valen leaned closer. "You see it?" The young man's nod was barely perceptible. "Focus on it," Valen told him. "Keep it small." He held him there, talking to him, fixing his eyes whilst Aspect Alera worked on his wound. The young man whimpered, and his eyes flickered away, but Valen always brought them back, until there was a dull clatter of metal falling into a pan, and Aspect Alera said, "Needle and catgut, please, Sister Sharon." "Master Solis teaches you well." They were in Aspect Alera's chamber, a room even more crammed with books and paper than Aspect Arlin's. But where the room of the Aspect of the Sixth Order had a certain chaotic quality, this one was tightly ordered and meticulously tidy. The walls were adorned with overlapping diagrams and pictures, graphic, almost obscene depictions of bodies shorn of skin or muscle. He found his eye continually drawn to the image on the wall behind her desk, a man shown spread-eagled and split from crotch to neck, the flaps of the wound drawn back to reveal his organs, each expertly rendered with absolute clarity. "Aspect," he said, tearing his gaze away. "The pain control technique you used," the Aspect explained. "Solis was always my most adept pupil."
"Pupil, Aspect?"
"Yes. We served together on the northeastern border years ago. On quiet days, I would teach the brothers of the Sixth relaxation and pain control techniques. It was a way to pass the time. Brother Solis was always the most attentive."
They knew each other. They served together. The idea of them even conversing felt incredible, but an Aspect would never lie.
"I'm grateful for Master Solis's wisdom, Aspect."
It seemed the safest reply.
His eyes flicked to the drawing again, and she glanced at it over her shoulder. "A remarkable work, don't you think? A gift from Master Benrel Leniel of the Third Order. He spent a week here drawing the sick and the recently expired. He said he wished to paint a picture that would capture the suffering of the soul. Preparatory work for his fresco commemorating the Red Hand. Of course, we were happy to allow access, and when he was done, he gifted his sketches to our order. I used them to teach the novice brothers and sisters the secrets of the body. The illustrations in our older books lack the same clarity."
She turned back.
"You did well this morning. I feel the other brothers and sisters learned much from your example. The sight of blood didn't concern you? Make you feel ill or faint?"
Was she joking?
"I'm accustomed to the sight of blood, Aspect." Her gaze clouded for a second before her customary smile returned. "I cannot tell you how much it gladdens my heart to see how strong you've grown, and that compassion is not absent from your soul. But I must know, why have you come here?"
He couldn't lie, not to her.
"I thought you might provide answers to my questions."
"And what questions are these?"
There seemed little point in vagary. "When did my father sire a bastard? Why was I sent to the Sixth Order? Why did assassins seek my death during the test of the run?" She closed her eyes, her face impassive, breathing regular and even. She stayed that way for several minutes, and Valen wondered if she was going to speak again. Then he saw it, a single tear snaking down her cheek. "Pain control techniques," he thought. She opened her eyes, meeting his gaze. "I regret I cannot answer your questions, Valen. Be assured that your service here is welcome. I believe you will learn much. Please report to Sister Sharon in the West Wing." Sister Sharon was the young woman who had assisted the Aspect in the tiled room. He found her wrapping bandages around the waist of the wounded man in a room off the West Wing corridor. The man's skin had an unhealthy grey pallor, and a sheen of sweat covered his flesh, but his breathing seemed regular, and he didn't appear to be in any pain.
"Will he live?" Valen asked her.
"I expect so." Sister Sharon secured the bandage in place with a clasp and washed her hands in a water basin. "Although service in this order teaches us that death can often deny our expectations. Take those." She nodded at a pile of blood-stained clothes lying in the corner. "They need to be cleaned. He'll need something to wear when he leaves here. The laundry is in the south wing."
"Laundry?"
"Yes." She faced him with the smallest of smiles. Although he fought it, Valen found himself taking note of her form. She was slender, the dark curls of her hair tied back, her face displaying a youthful prettiness, but her eyes somehow bespoke a wealth of experience well beyond her years. Her lips formed the words with perfect precision. "The laundry." He was discomforted by her, preoccupied with the curve of her cheekbones, and the shape of her lips, the brightness of her eyes, relishing confrontation. He quickly gathered the clothes and went to find the laundry. He was relieved to find he wasn't required to wash the clothes himself, and after Sister Sharon's cool reception, somewhat taken aback by the welcome he received from the brothers and sisters in the steam-filled laundry room.
"Brother Valen!"
boomed a large, bear-like man, his hair-covered chest beaded with sweat. His hand felt like a hammer on Valen's back.
"I've waited 10 years for a brother from the Sixth to come through our doors, and when we finally get one, it's their most famous son."
"I'm pleased to be here, brother," Valen assured him. "I have to clean these clothes."
"Oh, tosh!"
The clothes were torn from his grasp and tossed into one of the large stone baths, where the laundry workers labored.
"We'll do that. Come and meet everyone."
The big man turned out to be a master, not a brother. His name was Herrin, and when he wasn't taking his turn in the laundry, he taught the novices the finer points of bones.
"Bones, master?" "Yes, my boy. Bones. How they work, how they fit together, how to mend them. I've snapped more arms back into sockets than I can remember. It's all in the wrist. I'll teach you before you leave if I don't break your arm first."
He laughed, the sound easily filling the cavernous chamber. The rest of the brothers and sisters gathered round to greet Velin, and he found himself assailed with numerous names and faces, all of whom displayed a disconcerting enthusiasm for his presence, as well as a plethora of questions. "Tell us, brother," one brother said, a thin man named Curlis. "Is it true your swords are made from star silver?"
"A myth, brother," Velin told him, remembering to keep Master Jestin's secret. "Our swords are finely made, but of plain steel only."
"Do they really make you live in the wilds?" a young sister asked, a plump girl called Henna.
"Only for 10 days. It's one of our tests."
"They make you leave if you fail, don't they?"
"If you live that long."
It was Sister Sharon standing in the doorway, arms crossed.
"That's right, isn't it, brother? Many of your brothers die in the tests. Boys as young as 11 years old.
"A hard life requires hard training," Velin replied. "Our tests prepare us for our role in defending the faith and the realm."
She raised an eyebrow.
"If Master Herring doesn't need to prolong your presence here, the teaching room needs mopping."
And so he mopped the teaching room. He also mopped all the rooms in the west wing. When he was done, she had him boil a mixture of pure spirit and water, and soak the metal implements the Aspect had used to treat the young man's wound. She told him it eradicated infection. The rest of the day was spent in similar endeavors, cleaning, mopping, scrubbing. His hands were tough, but he soon found them chafing with the work. The flesh red from soap and scrubbing by the time Sister Sharon told him he could go and eat.
"When do I learn how to heal?" he asked.
She was in the teaching room, laying out a variety of instruments on a white cloth. He had spent 2 hours cleaning them, and they shone brightly in the light from the overhead window.
"You don't," she replied, not looking up. "You get to work. If you think you won't get in the way, I'll let you watch when I tend to someone."
A variety of responses flickered through his mind, some caustic, some clever, but all certain to make him sound like a petulant child.
"As you wish, sister. What hour do you require me?"
"We start at the 5th hour here."
She gave a conspicuous sniff. "Before reporting for work, you're expected to wash thoroughly, which would help diminish a rather pungent aroma."
"Don't they wash in the 6th Order?
"Every 3 days we swim in the river. It's very cold, even in summer."
She said nothing, placing a strange-looking implement on the cloth, 2 parallel blades fastened by a screw device.
"What is that?" he asked.
"Rib spreader. It allows access to the heart."
"The heart?"
"Sometimes the beat of a heart will stop, and can be recommenced by gentle massage."
He looked at her hands, slim fingers moving with measured precision.
"You can do this?"
She shook her head.
"I've yet to learn such skills.
The Aspect can, though. She can do most things.
She'll teach you one day."
She glanced up at him, her expression wary.
"You should eat, brother."
"You're not eating?"
"I take my meals later than the others. I have more work to do here."
"Then I'll stay. We can eat together." She barely paused in scrubbing at a steel basin.
"I prefer to eat alone, thank you."
He stopped a sigh of exasperation before it escaped his mouth.
"As you wish."
There were more questions at mealtime, more intense curiosity almost making him wish for Sister Sharon's disinterest. The masters of the 5th Order ate with their students, so he sat with Master Herrin amongst a group of novice brothers and sisters. He was surprised by the variety in the ages of the novices at the table, the youngest little more than 14, whilst the oldest clearly in his 50s.
"People often come to our order late in life," Master Herrin explained. "I didn't join until my 32nd year.
was in the Realm Guard before then. 30th Regiment of Foot. The Bloody Boars. You've heard of them, no doubt.
Their renown does them credit, Master, Valen lied, never having heard of such a regiment. How long has Sister Sharon been here?
Been here since an infant, that one. Worked in the kitchens. Didn't start training till she turned 14, though. That's the youngest we'll allow novices to join. Not like your order, eh? It's but one of many differences, Master.
Harin laughed, heartily, and took a large bite from a chicken leg. Food in the Fifth Order was much the same as the Sixth, but there was less of it. Valen experienced a moment's embarrassment when he began wolfing down large helpings with habitual haste, drawing bemused glances from others at the table.
"Have to eat quickly in the Sixth," he explained. "Wait too long and it'll all be gone."
"I heard they starve you as punishment," said Sister Henna, the plump girl he'd met at the laundry. She asked even more questions than the others, and whenever he looked up, she seemed to be watching him.
"Our masters have more practical ways of punishing us than starvation, sister," he told her.
"When do they make you fight to the death?" the thin man Innes asked. The question was voiced with such earnest curiosity, Valen found he couldn't take offense. "The test of the sword comes in our 7th year in the Order. It is our final test." "You have to fight each other to the death?" Sister Henna seemed shocked. Valen shook his head. "We will be matched against 3 condemned criminals. Murderers, outlaws, and so forth. If they defeat us, they are considered to have been judged innocent of their crimes, as the departed will not accept them into the beyond. If we defeat them, we are judged fit to carry a sword in service to the Order."
"Brutal but simple,"
Master Harin commented before belching loudly and patting his stomach.
"The ways of the Sixth Order may seem harsh to us, my children, but do not forget they stand between our faith and those who would destroy it. In times past, they fought to keep us safe. If not for them, we wouldn't be here to offer care and healing to the faithful. Think well on that."
There was a murmur of agreement around the table, and for once conversation turned to other matters. The concerns of the Fifth Order seemed to revolve mainly around bandages, medicinal herbs, various forms of disease, and the endlessly popular subject of infection. He wondered if he should be more upset at having to discuss the test of the sword, but found it left him with little more than a vague sense of unease. He had known it was coming, since his first days in the Order. They all had. It was an annual event, watched by a great many of the city's populace. And although novice brothers of the Order were forbidden to attend, he had heard many stories of prolonged combats and unfortunate brothers whose skills had failed to match the final test. However, set against what he had already experienced, it seemed little more than one of many dangers ahead. Perhaps that was the point of the tests, to render them immune to danger, accepting fear as a normal part of their lives. "Do you have tests?" he asked Master Harin.
"No, my boy. No tests here. Novice brothers and sisters stay in the Order House for 5 years, where they are trained in our ways. Many will leave, or be asked to leave, but those who stay will have earned the skills to heal, and will be appointed tasks that match their abilities. Myself, I spent 20 years at the Cumbrellin capital, seeing to the needs of the small, faithful community there. It's a hard thing, brother, to live amongst those who would deny the faith.
The King's Edict tells us Cumbrellins are our brothers in the realm, as long as they keep their beliefs within their own fief."
"Pah!" Master Harin spat.
"Cumbrell may have been forced into the realm by the King's sword, but always she seeks to promote her blasphemy. I was approached many times by god-worshipping clerics, seeking my conversion. Even now she sends them across her borders to spread their heresy amongst the faithful. I fear your order, and mine, will have much work in Cumbrell in the years to come." He shook his head sadly.
"A pity. War was ever a terrible thing."
They gave him a cell in the south wing, bare apart from a bed and a single chair. He undressed quickly and slipped into the bed, enjoying the unfamiliar but luxuriant feel of clean, fresh linen. Despite the comfort, sleep was slow in coming. Master Heron's talk of Cumbrell had disturbed him. War was ever a terrible thing. But there was something in the master's eyes that seemed almost eager for war to be visited on the heretical fief.
Sister Sharon's coldness was another concern. She clearly wanted little to do with him, which he found bothered him greatly, and had no regard for the Sixth Order, which he found bothered him not at all. He resolved to try harder to win her confidence in the morning. He would do everything she asked of him without question or complaint. He had a suspicion she would respect little else. However, what kept him awake longest was Aspect Alera's refusal to answer his questions. He had been so sure she would provide the answers he craved that the prospect of a refusal hadn't even occurred to him. "She knows," he thought with certainty. "So why won't she tell me?" He fell asleep with the questions tumbling through his mind, finding no answers in his dreams. He forced himself out of bed at first light, washed thoroughly in the trough in the courtyard, and reported for work a good measure before the fifth hour. Sharon was there before him. "Fetch bandages from the storeroom," she said. "People will soon be at the gate seeking treatment." She frowned as he moved past her. "You smell better, at least." He borrowed a trick from Norta and forced a smile. "Thank you, sister." The first was an old man with stiff joints and endless tales of his time as a sailor. Sister Sharon listened politely to his stories as she massaged balm into his joints, giving him a jar of the substance to take home. The next was a thin young man, with trembling hands and bloodshot eyes, who complained of severe pains in the belly. Sister Sharon felt his stomach and the vein in his wrist, asked a few questions and told him that the Fifth Order did not give red flower to addicts.
"Up yours, Order bitch," the young man spat at her. "Watch your mouth," Phelan said, stepping forward to throw him out, but Sharon stopped him with a glare. She stood impassively as the young man swore at her viciously for a full minute, whilst casting wary glances at Phelan before storming out, his profanity echoing through the hallway. "I don't need a protector," Sharon told Valen. "Your skills are not required here." "I'm sorry," he said, teeth gritted, failing to summon another Norta smile. They came in all ages and sizes, men and women, mothers with children, sisters with brothers, all cut, bruised, pained or sick. Sharon seemed to know the nature of their ailments instinctively, working without pause or rest, tending to them all with equal care. Velin watched, fetched bandages or medicine when he was told, trying to learn but instead finding himself preoccupied with Sharon. Fascinated by the way her face changed when she worked, the severity and wariness disappearing into compassion and humor, as she joked and laughed with her charges, many of whom she clearly knew well. "That's why they come," he realized. "She cares." And so he tried as hard as he could to help, fetching, carrying, restraining the fearful and the panicked, offering awkward words of comfort to the wives or sisters or children who brought the wounded to be healed. Most were in need of little more than medicine or a few stitches. Some, the ones Sharon knew so well, had prolonged sicknesses and took the longest time to treat, as she asked numerous questions and offered advice or sympathy. Twice, grievously wounded people came in. The first was a man with a crushed stomach who had walked into the path of a runaway cart. Sister Sharon felt the vein in his neck and began pumping at his chest with both fists clamped over his sternum. His heart stopped beating, she explained. She kept at it until blood began to flow from the man's mouth. "He's gone." She moved back from the bed. "Fetch a trolley from the storeroom and take him to the morgue. It's in the south wing. And clean the blood from his face. The family don't like to see that." Valen had seen death before, but her coldness took him by surprise. "That's all? There's nothing else you can do?" A cart weighing half a ton ran over his stomach, turning his guts to mush and his spine to powder. "There is nothing else I can do." The second badly wounded man was brought in by the realm guard in the evening, a stocky fellow with a crossbow bolt through his shoulder. "Sorry, sister," the sergeant apologized to Sharon, as he and two fellow guards hauled the man onto the table. "Hate to waste your time with one such as this, but we'll get hell from the captain if we turn up with another corpse."
He gave Valen a curious glance, taking in his dark blue robe.
"You appear to be in the wrong house, brother."
"Brother Valen is here to learn how to heal," Sharon informed him, leaning over the stocky man to examine his wound.
20 feet?
She inquired.
Closer to 30. One of the guards sniffed proudly, hefting his crossbow.
And he was running.
Valin,
the sergeant murmured, his glance turning into a stare of scrutiny as he looked Valin up and down.
Alsauna, right?
That's my name. The three guards laughed. It wasn't a pleasant sound, and Valin instantly regretted leaving his sword in the cell that morning.
The boy brother who beat 10 hawks single-handed, the younger guard said.
You're taller than they said.
It wasn't 10, Valin began.
I wish I'd been there to see that, the sergeant interrupted. Can't stand those bloody hawks, strutting about the place. Hear they're making a plan of revenge, though. You should watch your back.
I always do.
Brother, Sharon cut in, I need catgut, needle, probe, a serrated knife, red flower, and cautery oil. The gel, not the juice. Oh, and another bowl of water.
He did as he was told, grateful for the chance to escape the guardsman's scrutiny. He went to the storeroom and filled a tray with the required items, returning to the treatment room to find it in uproar. The stocky man was on his feet, backed into a corner, his meaty fist clamped around Sister Sharon's throat. One of the guardsmen was down, a knife buried in his thigh. The other two had their swords drawn, shouting threats and fury.
"I'm walking out of here!"
the stocky man shouted back.
"You're going nowhere!"
the sergeant barked in response.
"Let her go and you'll live. I go inside! What I'll have me done, stand aside or I'll wring this bitch's—"
The serrated knife Valin had fetched from the storeroom was heavier than he was used to, but it wasn't a difficult throw. The man's throat was clearly open, but his death spasm might have caused him to snap Sister Sharon's neck. The blade sank into his forearm, causing his hand to open by reflex, allowing Sharon to collapse to the floor. Valin vaulted the bed, scattering the tray's contents across the room, and felled the stocky man with a few well-placed punches to the nerve centers in his face and chest.
"Don't," Sharon gasped from the floor. "Don't kill him."
Valin watched the man slumping to the floor, his eyes vacant.
"Why would I?"
He helped her to her feet.
"Are you hurt?"
She shook her head, pulling away. "Get him back on the bed," she told him, her voice hoarse. "Sergeant, if you could help me get your comrade to another room."
"Be doing the bastard a favor if you had killed him, brother,"
the sergeant grunted as he and the other guardsmen helped the fallen comrade to his feet.
"Hanging day tomorrow."
Valin had to struggle to get the man off the floor. He seemed to be composed mainly of muscle and weighed accordingly. He groaned in pain as Valin let him fall back onto the bed, his eyes flickering open.
"Unless you've got another knife hidden," Valin told him, "I'd lie still."
The man's gaze was baleful, but he said nothing.
"So who's One Eye?"
Valin asked him.
"Why does he want you dead?"
"I owe him money,"
the man said, his face slicked with sweat and lined with pain from his wounds. He recalled Frentice's tales of his time on the streets, and the wayward throwing knife that had caused him to seek refuge in the Order.
"Your tax?" 3 golds. I'm in arrears. We've all got to pay. And One Eye hates those that don't pay with a passion."
The man coughed, staining his chin with blood. Valin poured a cup of water and held it to his lips.
"I have a friend who told me once about a man who lost an eye to a boy with a throwing knife," Valin said.
The stocky man swallowed the water, his cough subsiding.
"Frentice. If only the little sod had killed the bastard. One Eye says he's going to take a year to skin him alive when he finds him."
Valin decided he would have to meet with One Eye sooner or later. He looked closely at the crossbow bolt still buried in the man's shoulder.
"Why did the Realm Guard do this?"
"Caught me coming out of the warehouse with a sack full of spice. Good stuff, too. I'd have made myself 6 golds at least."
"He's going to die for a sack full of spice," Valin realized. "That and stabbing a guardsman and trying to choke Sister Sharon."
"What's your name?"
"Gallus.
Gallus the Climber, they call me. Not a wall I can't scale."
Wincing, he lifted his forearm, the serrated knife still embedded there.
"Looks like I won't be doing that again."
He laughed, then convulsed with pain.
"Any red flower going, brother?"
"Prepare a tincture." Sister Sharon had returned with the sergeant in tow. 1 part red flower to 3 parts water.
Valin paused to look at her neck,
red and bruised from Gallus's grip. You should have that seen to. Momentary anger flashed in her eyes, and he could tell she was biting back a sharp retort. He couldn't tell if she was angry that she had been proved wrong, or that he had saved her life. "Please prepare the tincture, brother," she told him in a hard rasp. She worked on Gallus for over an hour, administering the red flower, then extracting the crossbow bolt from his shoulder, cutting the shaft in half, then widening the wound and gently pulling the barbed point free, Gallus biting on a leather strap to stifle his cries. She worked on the knife in his arm next. It was more difficult, being closer to major blood vessels, but came free after 10 minutes' work. Finally, she sewed the wounds shut after painting them with cautery gel. Gallus had lost consciousness by then, and his color had noticeably paled. "He's lost a lot of blood," Sharon told the sergeant. "He can't be moved yet."
"Can't wait too long, sister," the sergeant said. "Gotta have him in front of the magistrate for the morning."
"No chance of clemency?" Phelan asked.
"I've got a man with a knifed leg next door," the sergeant replied, "and the bugger tried to kill the sister."
"I don't recall that," Sharon said, washing her hands. "Do you, brother?" "Is a sack full of spice worth a man's life?"
"Not at all."
The sergeant's face took on a deeply angry tinge.
"This man is a known thief, drunkard, and red flower fiend. He would have killed us all to get out of here."
"Brother Valen," Sharon said, "when is it right to kill?"
"In defense of life," Valen replied promptly. "To kill when not defending life is a denial of the faith."
The sergeant's lip curled in disgust.
"Soft-hearted order, sods," he muttered before stalking from the room.
"You know they'll hang him anyway," Valen asked her. Sharon lifted her hands from the bloodied water, and he passed her a towel. She met his eye for the first time that day, speaking with a certainty that was almost chilling. "No one is going to die on my account." He avoided the evening meal, knowing his actions would only have added to his celebrity, and finding himself unable to face the torrent of questions and admiration. So he hid himself in the gatehouse, with Brother Selin, the aged gatekeeper, who had greeted him the previous morning. The old brother seemed glad of the company, and refrained from asking questions or mentioning the day's events, for which Valen was grateful. Instead, at Valen's insistence, he told stories of his time in the Fifth Order, proving that a man did not have to be a warrior to see much of war.
"Got this one on the deck of the Sea Spite."
Selin displayed an odd horseshoe-shaped scar on the underside of his forearm.
"I was stitching a wound in a Maldanian pirate's stomach when he rears up and bites me, nearly down to the bone.
It was just after the Battle Lord had burned their city, so I suppose he had good reason to be angry. Our sailors threw him in the sea." He grimaced at the memory.
"Begged them not to, but men'll do terrible things when their blood's up."
"How did you come to be on a warship?" Valen asked.
"Oh, I was Fleet Lord Merlish's personal physic for a number of years. He always had a soft spot for me, since I cured his pox a few years before. A right fine old captain he was. Loved the sea like a mother. Loved all sailors. Even had respect for the Maldinians. Best sailors in the world, he said. Broke his heart when the Battle Lord burned their city. They had a mighty row about it, I can tell you."
"They argued?" Valen was curious. Brother Selin was one of the few people he had met who didn't initially refer to the Battle Lord as his father. In fact, he appeared blithely unaware of the fact, although Valen suspected that the old man had been in service to the faith for so long that disassociating its servants from their family connections was simply second nature.
"Oh yes," Selin continued. "Fleet Lord Merlis called him a butcher, a killer of innocents, said he'd shamed the realm forever. Everyone who heard it thought the Battle Lord would draw his sword, but all he said was, 'Loyalty is my strength, my lord.'"
Selin sighed, sipping from a leather flask Valen suspected contained a mixture not dissimilar to what Brother Mackerel had called Brother's Friend.
"Poor old Merlish. Stayed in his cabin all the way home. Refused to report to the king when we docked. He died not long after. His heart gave out on a voyage to the far west."
"Did you see it?" Valen asked. "Did you see the city burn?"
"I saw it." Brother Selin took a deep pull from his flask. "I saw it, all right. Lit up the sky for miles around. But it wasn't the sight of it that chilled you. It was the sound. We were anchored a good half mile offshore, and still you could hear the screams.
thousands, men, women, children, all screaming in the fire. He shuddered and drank again.
I'm sorry, brother. I shouldn't have asked.
Selin shrugged.
Time's past, brother. Can't live in 'em. Just learn from 'em.
He peered out at the gathering dark.
You best be getting back, else you'll not get a meal tonight.
He found Sister Sharon in the meal hall. Eating alone was her habit. He expected a rebuke or outright rejection when he sat opposite her, but she made no comment. The kitchen staff had placed a good selection on the table, but she seemed content with a small plate of bread and fruit.
May I?
He asked, gesturing at the array of food. She shrugged, so he helped himself to some ham and chicken, gulping it down ravenously, drawing a plainly disgusted glance.
He grinned, taking guilty enjoyment in her discomfort. I'm hungry.
There was the faintest ghost of a smile as she looked away.
No one eats alone in the Sixth Order, he told her.
We all have our groups. We live together, eat together, fight together. We call each other brother with good reason.
Here, things seem to be different.
My brothers and sisters respect my privacy, she said.
Because you're special? You can do what they can't?
She took a bite of apple and gave no reply.
How's the thief? He asked.
Well enough. They moved him to the upper floor. The sergeant put two men on his door.
Do you intend to speak for him at the hearing?
Of course. Although it would help his case if you spoke as well.
I feel your word would carry more weight than mine.
He washed down a mouthful of ham with some water.
What is it, sister,
that makes you care so much for one such as him? Her face hardened. What is it that makes you care so little? Silence reigned at the table for a few minutes. Finally he said,
Did you know my mother trained here?
She was a sister, like you. She left the Fifth Order to marry my father. She never told me she had served here. She never told me about this part of her life. I came here seeking answers. I wanted to know who she was, who I was, who my father was. But the aspect would tell me nothing. Instead, she paired me with you, which I think was an answer in itself.
An answer to what?
Who my mother was, at least.
Perhaps partly who I am. I'm not like you, I'm no healer. I would have killed that man today if I could. I've killed before.
You couldn't kill anyone, and neither could she. That's who she was.
And your father?
Thousands. Men, women, children, all screaming in the fire. Loyalty is my strength. He was a man who burned a city because his king told him to. He pushed his plate away and got up from the table.
I'll speak for Gallus before the magistrate.
See you at the fifth hour. In the morning it transpired that their presence at the magistrate's court would not be necessary. Gallus had escaped during the night. The guards had entered his room on the top floor to find it empty and the window open. The wall outside was nearly 30 feet high, with hardly any visible handholds. Bailey leaned out of the window to peer at the courtyard below.
Gallus the climber, he murmured.
With the wounds he had, he shouldn't have been able to walk. Sister Sharon moved close to inspect the wall outside. Bailey found her proximity both intoxicating and uncomfortable, but she seemed unconcerned.
I'll never know how he managed it.
Master Solis says a man doesn't know his true strength until he fears for his life. The sergeant said he'd track the man down if it takes him all his days. She moved away, leaving Velin in a confusion of regret and relief. He probably will. That, or I'll see him again, dragged through the doors with another wound for me to heal. If he's smart, he'll get himself on a ship and be far away by nightfall. Sharon shook her head. People don't leave this place, brother, no matter the threats against them. They stay and live out their lives. He turned back to the window. The southern quarter was waking up to the day, the pale morning sky just taking on the stain of chimney smoke that would hang over the rooftops until nightfall, the shortening shadows revealing streets soiled with mingled refuse and excreta, dotted here and there the huddled forms of the drunk, drugged or homeless. Already he could hear vague shouts of conflict or hatred, and wondered how many more would come through the doors today.
Why?
He wondered. Why stay in a place such as this?
I did, she said. Why shouldn't they?
You were born here?
She nodded. I was lucky enough to complete my training in only 2 years. The Aspect offered me any posting in the realm. I chose this one. The hesitancy in her voice told him he was probably the first person to hear her reveal so much of her past. Because this is home? Because I felt this is where I needed to be. She moved to the door. We have work, brother. The next few days were hard but rewarding, not least because he was constantly in Sister Sharon's presence. The parade of injured and ill coming through the door provided plenty of opportunity to increase his meager healing skills, as Sharon began to impart some of her knowledge, teaching him the best pattern to use when stitching a cut and the most effective mix of herbs for aches in the stomach or head. However, it quickly became obvious the skills she possessed would never be his. She had an eye and an ear for sickness, so unerring it reminded him of his own affinity for the sword. Luckily, there was no further need for him to display his skills, as the level of aggression amongst patients had declined considerably since his first day. Word had spread through the southern quarter that there was a brother from the sixth here, and most of the more shady characters turning up to request treatment wisely kept their tongues still and violent urges in check. The only negative aspect to his time in the fifth was the constant attention of the other brothers and sisters. He had continued to take his meals with Sister Sharon late in the evening, and they soon found themselves joined by a cluster of novices eager for Valen's tales of life in the Sixth Order, or a retelling of what they had termed his rescue of Sister Sharon, a tale that seemed to have become a minor legend in only a few days. As ever, Sister Henna was his most attentive audience.
"Weren't you scared, brother?"
she asked,
wide brown eyes gazing up at him. "When the big brute was going to kill Sister Sharon, didn't it frighten you?"
Beside him, Sharon, who until now had borne the intrusion on her mealtime with stoic calm, pointedly let her cutlery fall onto her plate with a loud clatter.
"I have been trained to control my fear," he replied, instantly realizing how conceited it sounded. "Not as well as Sister Sharon, though." He went on quickly. "She remained calm throughout." "Oh, she never gets bothered by anything." Henna waved a hand dismissively. "So why didn't you kill him?"
"Sister!"
Brother Curlis exclaimed. She lowered her gaze, a flush creeping up her cheeks. "I'm sorry," she mumbled.
"It matters not, sister."
He patted her hand awkwardly, which seemed to make her blush even more. "Brother Valen and I have had a long day," Sister Sharon said. "We would like to eat in peace." Although she wasn't a mistress, her word evidently commanded obedience, because their small audience quickly dispersed back to their rooms.
"They respect you," Valen observed.
She shrugged.
"Perhaps, but I am not liked here. I am envied and resented by most of my brothers and sisters. The Aspect warned me it might be this way."
Her tone indicated little concern. She was simply stating a fact.
"You could be judging them too harshly.
Perhaps if you mixed with them more."
"I'm not here for them. The Fifth Order is the means by which I can help the people I need to help."
"No room for friendship? A soul in whom to confide, share a burden?"
She gave him a guarded glance.
"You said it yourself, brother. Things are different here."
"Well, although you may not welcome it, I hope you know you have my friendship."
She said nothing, sitting still, eyes fixed on her half-empty plate.
Was this how it was for my mother? He wondered. Was she so isolated by her abilities? Did they resent her too?
He found it hard to imagine. He remembered a woman of kindness, warmth, and openness. She could never have been as closed to emotion as Sharon.
"Sharon is formed by whatever happened to her beyond the gates," he realized. "Out there, in the southern quarter. My mother would have had a different life." A thought occurred to him then, something he had never considered before. "Who was she before she came here? What was her family name? Who were my grandparents?" Suddenly preoccupied, he rose from the table.
"Sleep well, sister. I'll see you in the morning."
"It's your last day tomorrow, is it not?" she asked, looking up at him. Oddly, her eyes seemed brighter than usual. It almost seemed she was tearful, but the idea was absurd.
"It is, although I still hope to learn more before I leave."
Yes. She looked away. Yes, of course. Sleep well. And you, sister. Sleep was beyond him as he sat, legs crossed beneath him, and pondered the realization that he knew almost nothing of his mother's past. She was a sister of the Fifth Order. She married his father. She bore him a son. She died. That was all he knew. For that matter, he knew just as little about his father. A soldier elevated by the king for bravery, later battle lord, city burner, father of a son and a daughter by different mothers. But who had he been before? Valen had no knowledge of where his father had been born, whether his grandfather had been a soldier or a farmer or neither. So many questions, raging in his mind like a storm. He closed his eyes and sought to control his breathing as Master Solis had taught him, a skill no doubt learned from the aspect of the Fifth Order, which in turn raised even more questions. Focus, he told himself. Breathe, slow and even. An hour later, the beat of his heart slowed, and the storm in his mind cooling, he was roused by a soft but insistent knock at his door. Pausing to pull his shirt over his head, he went to the door, finding Sister Henna there, smiling shyly. Brother, she said, a voice a little above a whisper. Have I disturbed you?
I wasn't sleeping.
Surely she can't want another story. The hour is late, sister. If you require something of me, perhaps it could wait until morning. Require something? Her smile broadened a little, and before he could stop her, she stepped past him into his cell. I require your forgiveness, brother, for my thoughtless words this evening. Valen's calmed heart was beginning to thump again. There is nothing to forgive.
Oh, but there is,
she whispered fiercely, moving close to him, making him step back, the door forced closed behind him. I am such a stupid girl. I say such silly things, thoughtless things. She moved closer still, pressing against him, the feel of her ample breasts against his chest, provoking an instant sheen of sweat and an unwelcome stirring in his groin. Say you forgive me, she implored, a faint sob in her voice as she laid her head on his chest. Say you don't hate me. He searched urgently through his mind for an appropriate response, but life in the Order had failed to equip him for such things.
Of course I don't hate you.
Gently he put his hands on her shoulders and eased her away from him, forcing a smile. You shouldn't worry over such a trifle. Oh, but I do, she assured him breathlessly. The thought of offending you of all people. She looked away ashamed. It's more than I could bear. You care too much for my opinion, sister. He reached behind him for the door handle. You should go now. Her hand reached out, touching his chest, feeling the muscle beneath his shirt. So hard, she murmured. So strong.
Sister,
he put his hand over hers. This is not...
She kissed him then, pressing close, her lips on his before he knew what had happened.
The sensation was overwhelming, a torrent of unaccustomed feelings washing through his body. This is wrong, he thought as her tongue probed between his lips. I should stop her. Right now. I must end this. Any second now. The sound that saved him was faint at first, a plaintive note on the wind seeping through his window, almost missed by his preoccupation with Sister Henna's lips. But something in it, something familiar, made him pause, pull away. Brother? Sister Henna asked, the whisper of her breath caressing his lips. Can you hear that? A slight frown creased her brow. I hear nothing. She giggled and pressed close again. But my heart beating and yours. The sound grew, an unmistakable siren call. Wolf's howl, he said. A wolf in the city? Sister Henna giggled again. It's just the wind, or a dog. Dogs don't howl like that. And it's not the wind. It's a wolf. I saw a wolf once in the forest, just before an assassin tried to kill me. It would have been easily missed had he not spent years studying his opponent's faces on the practice ground, searching for the ticks and subtle changes in expression that warned of an attack. and he saw it in hers, a brief flicker of decision in her eyes. "You shouldn't worry over such things," she said, her left hand coming up to caress his face. "Forget your worries, brother. Let me help you for..." The knife in her right hand came free of her robes in a blur, the steel shining bright as it arced towards his neck. It was a practiced move, executed with the speed and precision of an expert. Valin twisted, the knife leaving a scratch on his shoulder, his right arm thrusting open-handed into her chest, propelling her back to collide with the far wall. She rebounded quickly, a look of feline hatred on her face, leaping, spinning a kick at his head, and bringing the knife round to slash at his belly. He dodged the kick and caught her wrist, twisting, hearing the crack, forcing down a spasm of revulsion. "She's not a girl, she's not a sister. She's an enemy." Her free hand came round in a punch, palm flat and four knuckles extended, aimed at the base of his nose, a blow he recognized from Master Interest's lessons, a killing blow. He moved his head, taking the punch on his brow, shaking off the sting of it and gripping her hard on the neck, forcing her against the wall. She thrashed, hissing, nails scraping at his face. He forced her head back, the bones of her neck straining, lifting her off her feet, tightening his grip to subdue her struggles. "You are very skilled, sister," he observed. A grunt of pained fury escaped her throat. Her skin felt hot against his hand. "Perhaps you could tell me where you learned such skills, and why you felt the need to practice them on me." Her eyes, shining bright amidst the flushed red mask of her face, flicked to the rip in his shirt and the shallow scar beneath. A smile, ugly and full of malice, twisted her lips. "Feeling well, brother?" she grated through spittle. "You don't have time to save her now." He felt it then, the heat rising in his chest, the fresh slick of sweat washing over him, a faint grayness creeping into the corners of his eyes. "Poison! Poison on the blade!" He leaned close, his face inches from hers, meeting the hatred in her eyes. "Save who?" Her horrible smile widened into a grotesque laugh. "Once there were seven," she told him, the hatred in her eyes shining like a lantern in the dark. Suddenly, she jerked her head back, forcing her mouth open, then clamping it shut with a loud clack of colliding teeth. She began to writhe in his grasp, shuddering uncontrollably, froth spouting from her mouth. He released his grip, letting her fall to the floor where she thrashed, feet slapping the tiles before lying still, eyes wide and unblinking, lifeless. Valin stared at her, sweat beading his forehead, the heat in his chest building to a fire. "Poison on the blade. You don't have time to save her now. Once there were seven. You don't have time to save her. Save her. Save her. The aspect." He went to where his sword was propped against the wall, tearing it free of the scabbard, dragging the door open, sprinting along the corridor to the stairwell. "Poison on the blade. How long did he have?" He chased the thought from his mind. "Long enough," he decided fiercely. "Leaping up the steps three at a time, I have long enough." The aspect's rooms were on the top floor. He got there in seconds, running along the corridor, seeing the door ahead, finding no sign of a threat. The blade was a sliver of light in the shadows, a half-crescent of steel, wielded with speed and skill. It should have taken his head off at the shoulders. He ducked it, going into a roll, feeling the wind rush as the sword bit the air above him. Coming to his feet, forming the parry stance in the same movement, the sword blade clashing with his own. He whirled, going down on one knee, sword arm fully extended,